I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Final hour of the show here, Christmas Eve on Grant and Danny. Pedro is in for GP. He'll be back with you, I think, the day after Christmas. I think the 26th. I got this straight. 26th, 27th, Thursday, Friday. I'm off until January 2nd. Once we're all back in.
26th is me solo. 27th is me and Grant.
So 26th, yeah, there you go. So 26th is you. 27th is you and GP. And then the following week, it's a weird week because there's like a, I think there's a Caps game at like noon or something on New Year's Eve.
Virginia Tech, there you go. Playing in the Belk Bowl.
There you have it. And then New Year's Day, everybody's hungover. Or if you're me, you had some tea, maybe had some dairy after nine. But no show really for us on New Year's. And then the second, we're all kind of back. So I'm off for a while. I'm doing the Jason Bishop plan where you piggyback your days off on days off that are already planned, and you use less of your days
off. Stroke of genius, as Jason has laid out the path that everybody else now tries to emulate.
We should all walk it. If you miss any of the program, frankly,
be kind, 6-7, the fan, rewind.
You can go and get the radio.com app. You rewind up to 24 hours with the radio.com rewind feature, the only one of its kind. Download the app, select our station, and go back in time. Tonight, a little programming note. 6:30 post Meridian, Game 7 of the World Series will play right here on 106.7 The Fan. They're also doing it tomorrow at 10 if you want a nice little Christmas gift. Nice little background while you're opening presents. Let's say you sit down and eat breakfast first and you really want to start opening presents around noon. That's probably when you'll hear, give or take, Howie Kendrick hitting the foul pole. Right? The Nats will go up. Or maybe Anthony Rendon as you're opening a nice present. The most glorious sound I've ever heard in my life. I know it's not the topic, but we're just sort of shooting the bull here, Pete. What will you remember most? Let's say we're fortunate enough to live another 50 years each, right? And you're sitting there in a rocking chair, sipping Lipton on the front porch, a nice weather, the breeze is blowing by, and you're shooting the bull with a friend. What's the thing you're going to remember most about that World Series run?
Wow. Two things. Howie's heroics. And probably Steven Strasburg taking that final step. He had accomplished pretty much everything, I think, individually as a player that you could accomplish. But seeing Steven Strasburg take that next step to that dominant level, stepping up to Max's level and the leadership that Max has shown. Well, Strasburg's play, I thought, stepped up to that level because we've seen the World Series really minimize great players. Mm-hmm. We've seen some of the greatest players of all time come up with itty-bitty ones when it comes to the postseason, and Steven Strasburg just marched through the postseason unbelievably for this baseball team. Those will be, for the playoffs themselves and the World Series itself, you know, that will be the specific thing to me. And the fact that no home team won a game.
Yeah, that's unusual. I mean, there are a lot of layers to it. I'll remember so many things. All the things you mentioned, I'm with you. I'm just thinking of the run in its entirety. This is the way that I'm wired. I know this about myself. And it takes you a long time to figure out who you are, right, as you go through life and you kind of settle into your proclivities and what you like and what you don't. Here's my parallel. For the Capitals and the Stanley Cup run, okay, I'm able to remember Lars Eller's goal. I'm able to remember the goal against Columbus in overtime when they were down 2-0. I'm able to remember DSP, his game-tying heroics, or some of the other goals in the Vegas series, or the cross-check by Ryan Reeves, or the save by Braden Holtby. The thing that I will call upon instantly when they go, Capital Stanley Cup run, lightning flashes, the band alive, in my brain, the synapses fire, first thing comes to mind, Kuznetsov, overtime, Penguins.
Because it had admonished that demon.
Because it was those bastards.
Yep.
Because they hadn't gotten past that point. The triumph over a rival that has ruined joy for me for decades Didn't matter. Didn't matter how good the Caps were. It was Lemieux. It was Yager. It was Francis Schetti. It was Ron Francis at different points. Sid. It was Larry Murphy. It was Sidney Crosby. It's my whole damn life. It's been those bleeping mother bleepers. And I hate them. I hate the Penguins so much. Beating them and sending those toothless yinzers to the exits in shame is one of the great sporting moments of my life. It was right up there. It was right up there with Darryl Grant. It was right up there with 70 Chip. It's right up there with the 35-point second quarter. The stuff that happened after that obviously makes it that much more special because you capitalized on getting further than you ever have. But getting further than you ever have was amazing. People might point to Juan Soto's hit off Josh Hader. I've been eliminated early in the postseason before. Had they lost that game, would have stunk. Would have felt like a big, empty waste given how far they'd come to get back from 19-31. But then it happened. You played the Dodgers, who were great. I mean, the Dodgers, objectively, are great. They are great. They were better than you all year long. You fight back in that game, okay. But you're going extras. It's going to be Kenley Jansen's going to come in and throw four scoreless or something crazy. You're going to lose on something fluky. Jock Peterson's ball's going to be fair, and that's going to be that. Didn't happen. Howie Kendrick's grand slam to get further than they ever have. That's what I'll remember the rest of my life. It's those two things. It's not even championship moments. It's to get this group, whichever, that's iterations have changed. There's no more Mike Green with the Caps, and there's no more, Ian Desmond or Mike Morse or Jason Worth or any of those guys. But, this core, this group that's here together, to get them further than they'd ever been where they could go, what I'll remember.
I think you're bringing up a good point, though, Dana, because I think we forget about, while we bask in the glow of the euphoria of the championship itself, along the way, there are many opportunities to have those championship hopes derailed. You mentioned the case of the Capitals. For Alexander Ovechkin, how many damn times as a Capitals fan did you have to listen to, he's a great player, but he hasn't been able to beat Sidney Crosby on a regular basis, and he hasn't won the cup. Well, that helped exorcise that demon because they knocked the Penguins out of the playoffs along their path. That made it even sweeter. And, obviously with the Nationals, I mentioned Strasburg's exploits all in the postseason, and we talked about it. He was a relief pitcher his very first year at San Diego State.
Mm-hmm.
Then he became a starter there. And so pitching in relief, quite foreign to the big right-hander for
a long time. Had done it in a minute, yeah.
But we go back and look at, maybe the most important three innings in the playoffs were what he did in the wild card game.
Uh-huh.
He kept order in place, so you only needed one hit or one thing to happen, which in the case of the Nationals happened on the same play because Soto got the hit that would have tied the game. We forget the game would have been
tied. Yeah, the game's tied.
But because Gresham runs over the ball, then the lead run comes in.
Yeah, the game's tied point. With Howie Kendrick coming up in that spot, I believe, right?
Still no guarantee.
With a runner in scoring position probably. And Soto on first, because that would have just been a clean single, two-run score. You go first and third, two outs. So who knows? You win the game anyway that way. But there's a million of those moments. I mean, you don't beat the Dodgers without Rendon's homer or Soto's homer back-to-back. You don't beat the Astros without Juan Soto taking Gerrit Cole out. You don't beat the Astros without Zimmerman hitting the home run to get it started against Cole to prove that he was human. There's a billion of those. I'm just thinking of that, the first flash into your mind when you think, Nationals World Series run, and it will always, to me, be Kendrick's grand slam. Yep. Same thing with the Capitals. It will always be Kuznetsov, and everybody watching the telecast thinks it's a save, right? Including the guys that I'm sitting there watching the game with, and go, I saved it. And then I saw that head turn slightly and the shoulders slump, and I just go, no, he didn't. And the pandemonium, man. The pandemonium. Only the people that were back there knew. Let's do this. We'll shift. Dwayne Haskins, I want to talk about that with you. 800-636-1067.
Good topic.
Has Haskins done enough? Because we got six quarters here. These last six quarters were really good. I'm not talking about good for a rookie. They were just good. That was good NFL quarterbacking. You can put whatever excuse you want up there that the teams they were playing were bad. Yep, that's what you're supposed to do against bad teams. You carve them up. They carved them up. Is what Dwayne Haskins did these last six quarters giving you enough reason not only to be excited, but to be confident in him and this team, potentially?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you.
I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Next year. The Mets just signed, apparently, according to John Heyman, Jeff Passan, and others. Former Met. Goodness gracious, I'm sure he's a former Met. I'm sure the Mets signed former Met. Okay, listen, 40 minutes left in the Christmas Eve show.
Not impossible that a guy could have been a former Met and they re-signed him.
Well, for God's sakes. Welcome back to the show. It's Grant Nanny here on The Fan. Pete is in for GP. The Mets have signed former Yankee Dellin Betances.
Wow.
Great signing for them because Yoenis Cespedes has this injury thing. A huge salary would have been owed to him this year. It got reduced by some sort of machination of contract that I don't understand. From 30-some million to 6 million, so they got a little space. So now they've improved their bullpen. The Braves have improved their bullpen. The Nationals, anyway, the Nationals won the World Series. So they haven't done anything. We will see what they do. You know, it's not in their DNA to spend big. I think I threw this out to Grant this week. Maybe it was last week. I can't remember. Days run together. But I think Rizzo has a philosophy. Okay, the philosophy wins you a lot of games, by the way, and it won a World Series. I'm not mad at it. I'm just saying, I think this is the philosophy. I'm not going to pay for the most volatile position in the sport. I'm not giving years. I'm not giving huge dollars. I'm not. I won't do it. I will fix it. I will throw some things at the wall. If they stick, great. If they don't, I'll fix it. I will always fix it. You can fix it. I think one time he finally said, you know what? I'm tired of this. I'm going to invest in it. That was Sean Kelly. Brandon Kinsler, guys of that ilk. And I think that experience
soured him a little bit.
Put him off, and he finally said, never again. Never
but
again.
Ironically, though, Danny, both of those guys, it wasn't necessarily performance. It was their character and their makeup, which really jettisoned them out of town.
Well, in Kelly's case, it was. Kinsler was good while he was here, but Kelly was hurt a bunch and, you know, was up and down, and you had all these rules. You couldn't throw him two straight days. You couldn't throw him 2 days out of four. You couldn't throw him when it was cold. You had to have an hour to warm up. And I love Sean Kelly. I'm a Sean Kelly guy. We stole him a pair of cowboy boots. Nobody tell him I said that. We do. He bet us Lamar Jackson win the Heisman. We're like, no, that's stupid. Casually won the Heisman, by the way, without a doubt. Glad we didn't bet him anything serious.
Clinched it in like week four.
Seriously. And Grant and I both watched it when they were finally on national TV the same week, and we watched him go for like 500 total yards, 6 touchdowns, and we went, oh, you might be in trouble. And we were.
I want to check your bank account.
Mm.
Get those boots ready.
We got to get them. We owe them the boots.
Find a pair.
Anyway, so that's what's going on. That's the latest. That's the deal. Dellin Betances is a New York Metropolitan. And their bullpen has got some stuff. Mm-hmm. They got guys that can throw a little bit. Nationals need to get to work in that regard. But for Dwayne Haskins, he's put in work the last couple weeks, Pete. You've seen it. You guys have watched the games. You know like we do. I thought all along that he is in as bad and adverse a situation for a young quarterback to come into as there is in the history of the sport. I mean that. I don't think it's hyperbolic. People in that building couldn't wait to let you know that they didn't want him. I think that it is one of the dumbest things in terms of people trying to save their own butts. That's just so destructive and counterintuitive and not helpful to the kid's development. That's number one. Number two, what I didn't realize was, and I was wrong about this, he was more of a project than I think a lot of people realized. And I think that's okay, by the way. There are projects that are worth undertaking. I think he is one. You've seen it these last couple weeks. He's played pretty well. Number three is this bad situation where you've got a coach that's already been fired, a guy from the Mesozoic era calling run plays every first down, having a tug of war with Kevin O'Connell about how to get him into the best spots. And despite all of that, despite only having for most of the season one wide receiver worth a damn available to him in Terry McLaurin, no tight end to help him in any way. Because remember, they had the most expensive tight end position in the sport with zero production from any of the guys that they're paying in Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis outside of week number one. And Haskins never had access to him. You've got a running game that's based on, you know, again, a pushing contest, dinosaur tendencies, no Darius Geis for the majority of the season. This is not a good situation for any quarterback, let alone a rookie like Dwayne Haskins. Despite all of that, last couple weeks has played well, admittedly against bad defenses, but has played well. Is that enough to get you excited? Is that enough to even make you confident in him and his ceiling being high enough going forward?
As I said earlier in the program, here's my concern. I believe the young man has the skill set and the want to do it. But what progress he has been making over the last couple of weeks, how much does that get stunted by new coaches coming in?
You have to wonder.
Perhaps a brand new offensive philosophy overall, though I'm sure Dan and whoever will assist him in making this decision on the next coach, I'm sure part of that is, okay, you've evaluated Dwayne Haskins on film. What do you think you can do with him? Can you fit, just like the Ravens fit an offense around Lamar Jackson, can you fit an offense around Dwayne Haskins? It's a major question going forward because you cannot allow there to be a regression in the progress and the confidence that he has gained. And I think that's more importantly. When he played against the Giants in week four, Danny, that was about the least confident football player I've seen out there, especially coming out of the program that he did in college football and the way he played there. But he had no confidence whatsoever because, in his defense, had absolutely no idea what he was doing, who he was throwing to, nor any time in which to do it. Now, you've seen slowly as he's gotten more confident, they've gotten more confident in giving him certain things. The reads are a lot shorter. The ball's coming out a lot faster. The sacks are less prevalent. Thus, the production is a lot better. Even though when they put Tony Bergstrom in the game, whatever side Tony Bergstrom is lining up on, hey, we're going to run
attention.
That way.
Yeah.
Attention, defensive shoppers.
That the offense is better. The offense is better than it was. There was a month plus where they scored 17 against the Dolphins, mind you, which at that time, the worst defense in the sport.
Life and death to win that game.
0, bad weather game, whatever. 9. Haskins' first start, they scored 9 points, 3 field goals against the Bills. Part of that is training wheels. Part of that is just handing it off, whatever. The offense has steadily improved as this season has gone on with a couple blips against Green Bay, what we now know is a pretty good defense that just shoved it on Minnesota last night. We've seen Green Bay do that to a lot of teams. 35, 27, 29 points. They're moving the football a little bit. Haskins is starting to get more comfortable. He's starting to play well. Nobody's saying that this is done, that he's a finished product. He's got plenty to go. Look at Baker Mayfield, who I thought should have won Rookie of the Year last year. Okay? Set a record for touchdown passes, despite Hugh Jackson not starting him for several weeks. Huge regression year two. Huge. Now you got questions. It's happened to a bunch of guys. There's certainly going to be more bumps in the road. Smart people get in a room that's very dark, and they watch all the film. They figure out what you don't do, and they try to make you do that. Right? People are going to be in the lab. You then add in what might be a new coach, new philosophy, new everything, new terminology. It's tough enough to be an NFL quarterback, let alone one that has to learn a brand new system, scheme, everything else in year two. It's why, by the way, I didn't want to draft a quarterback this year. But I think Haskins is so worth it, or at the time I did, that I'm fine with it. I was fine with a long-term project. But anyway, I'll get back to this. 800-636-1067. Has Haskins done enough to make you excited and confident in him going forward? One more segment of this. Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Just saw this from The Post. Welcome back. Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Pete in for GP. Merry Christmas to one and all here on this Christmas Eve show. I'm going to talk Haskins in about 20 seconds here. But just saw this, Pete, anecdotally. feels like it's right to me. You know me, I'm a huge NBA guy. I love the association. I love basketball. I have my whole life. I know you're a Hoops fan too. I found myself watching less NBA. It started last year for me, and it's carried over into this year. I just watch less games. It's just not part of my rhythm like it used to be. And I'm doing the thing that I now do, kind of do for college basketball, where I'll loosely tune in, kind of keep tabs on the fact that, you know, Kansas was number one, just got knocked off by Villanova. I'll figure out who the big boys are, right? You know, how good Duke is, last year how good UVA was, a couple of the locals. And I keep tabs on it, and then I really amp up, start February, March, conference tournament time, et cetera. I'm kind of doing that now with the association, and I'm not alone. This is the headline here from the Post on Twitter. A sharp ratings dip has exacerbated one of the toughest stretches in recent memory for the NBA. Commissioner Adam Silver says he's not surprised and not concerned. Good for Adam Silver. I bet you he is surprised that he is concerned. I don't know what's going on, but the NBA's got a ratings problem all of a sudden, and nobody saw it coming.
Because we have gotten to the point in the NBA where we market individual players, and they're great. Guys like Giannis, LeBron, and the Lakers are enjoying a great renaissance so far this season. But we have really hamstrung the league by putting a lot of the great stars. The league held the players held the league hostage, and the players won. You know, when guys like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, especially in the case of Paul George, can force his way out of Oklahoma City to end up with the Clippers with Paul George. I mean, look around the league. I mean, you know, the great stars with a handful of franchises, and the league does not do a good job of putting Bradley Beal on TV, because when the Wizards are on, the ratings just don't occur. You look at all the other teams. I mean, who's watching the Cleveland Cavaliers right now? You know, Kevin Love doesn't bring anybody to the table solo the way it is. The league puts the same five or six teams on TV, and when they do this little mini tournament, however they do it, you know, whether it's one versus,
yeah, we got to get into
32
that
or whatever, and just play single elimination that way. Okay, that might pique my interest to watch for a couple of days there. But look, I mean, we've put all these stars. We put AD. AD forced his way out of New Orleans,
yeah,
onto
that's
the Lakers.
Big one.
I mean, come on. I mean, what are you supposed to do? I mean, outside of those teams, who else is there to watch on a regular basis, you know, outside of your own local team, in our case, the Wizards?
Yeah, super quick, and I want to get to Haskins. I keep putting this off. I think two things have happened. One, teams are being smart, the same way they are in baseball, where they go, it's not worth overspending just to be okay. It's better to be bad on purpose. So they're tanking, and I think that hurts. That's number one. You got a bunch of teams with, you know, records like 11-19, 8-23, 6-25. Teams are bad, and they're doing it on their terms. I actually think that's smart, but that hurts television product. Number two, I think when we decided, I don't know if it's me or you or Ryan or Sean, whoever did it, when we decided that we cared about where someone was going while games were going on,
mm-hmm.
That was the undoing. I think they realized once that cat got out of the bag. Is that the right analogy? Cat out of the bag? Or I was looking for, you know,
close enough.
The you kept open Pandora's box and the cat got out, whatever. Once that opened up, where we're sitting there in the middle of the season talking about free agency 6 months away, where someone was going to go more so than the sport itself, I think that was the toothpaste couldn't get back in the
tube. Kevin Durant could not play a game last year without a post game with someone asking right. him, hey, what are your thoughts on where you're going to be next year? I mean, they're playing in, like, you know, Cleveland in the middle of January. Kevin, where are you going to play, you know, next right. year? I mean, come on. I mean, you know, what are we doing here?
What we're doing here.
And by the way, it's hard for me to watch because I miss watching Kevin play. So
yeah.
He's one of my favorite players.
800-636-1067. That just came across my purview. I wanted to share that with you. We're talking Haskins here. Pete's weighed in. I'll weigh in here in a second. But it's about, has Dwayne Haskins done enough to make you excited or to make you even confident in him, his ceiling, his development, his growth? It's really about these last six quarters. Has he done enough? Because he's not going to play week 17 to make you excited for next year. Let's go to our buddy Kevin Arlington. Kevin, Merry Christmas, man. What are your thoughts on this?
Hey, Merry Christmas, fellas. Yeah, you know, I was always very skeptical because of my concern with his mechanics and his accuracy, but, man, he's been terrific in terms of his ascension from where he started. And the last few games, he's looked like a legit top quarterback prospect. And so in that vein, and like you, I've given up hope that Bruce Allen's going anywhere. I really hope they promote Kevin O'Connell to head coach and retain Callahan as associate head coach or whatever you need to do to reward him. But we need to continue to develop both Haskins and O'Connell. A lot of people think O'Connell has head coaching ability. I think you've finally seen his imprint on what he can do. I think Callahan has let him do more and more, and I like what I see.
Kevin, appreciate you, buddy. Appreciate the calls all year long, man. It's folks like you that make this show go, so really appreciate that. And good call as always. I like his point about O'Connell an awful lot. I think you touched on this, Pete.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of keeping that band together, at least the rhythm section together, right? Those two guys are growing together. Kevin O'Connell being groomed to be a head coach one day. You don't want to have a yet another Sean, and there's only one Sean McVay, but a LaFleur. I mean, when Matt LaFleur was here, with all due respect to the guy, he's a good head coach. Nobody thought there's a next head coach of the Green Bay Packers who's going to be 13-3.
But in your Nobody infinite pursuit of the next Sean McVay, do you get Matt LaFleur, Kyle Shanahan, or do you get Zach Taylor?
That's the other part of it. Well, Zach Taylor's young with a short haircut, so I'm sure he's, well, that guy's going to be 1-15.
I'm just saying.
No, it's a good point.
Get Zach Taylor.
It's a good point by you.
And then where do you go?
To me, I like the idea, though, of not forcing Haskins to learn brand new everything.
Right.
Right? Because it's not just what the terminology is, what the plays are. There's a rhythm to every step that you take on the football field. For this one, it's 1-2-3 out. The next one, it's 1-2-3 pat out. And it's you got to unlearn what you've learned. And you're still in a developmental phase. To me, trying to keep as much of that together as possible. Because I think Kevin O'Connell can coordinate a good offense. I think we've seen glimpses of it when he's been allowed to do what he does. Right? You've seen some creative things. You've seen some things that work. I think he thinks about the game the way that right now it should be thought about.
Here's what I like. I like the passing concepts that they've come up with because guess what? Remember a few weeks ago when it seemed like the only guy Dwayne was looking for was Terry McLaurin?
Uh-huh.
Now look at the distribution of the football. It's Kelvin Harmon. It's Steven Sims Jr. You know, the one thing he still needs to do is learn to play another day by throwing to the running back for the check down when it's available instead of maybe trying to force it somewhere else. I mean, there are a couple of times now where the check down is readily available right to him almost immediately when something else isn't. Be willing to take that check down, get 4 or 5 yards, and live to play another day. But just look at the distribution of the football over the last couple of weeks as well. That tells you the progress that not only Dwayne is making, but that Kevin is making with Dwayne in terms of trying to put these concepts together that best fits both of them. One is a play caller because you need to be able to call more than two pass plays a game, but it shows you the merge of the marriage between those two and how well it's going in terms of the passing concepts that they're running and that they're being successful with.
Well, Kansas City runs a clinic each week in maximizing play effectiveness. And yes, they take deep shots, and that's always awesome, and that changes the defense. You force them to account for the stuff, and then you can do what you really want to do, which is underneath and intermediate. They make you pick. There are three targets on your body that you have to cover. Head, midsection, and junk, right? And early downs, they throw
Not
to running backs.
Not necessarily in that order.
Right, and they throw to running backs. They throw short, behind the line of scrimmage, and they're getting 4.5 yards
sure.
on that. You do that a bunch of times. That's the most efficient thing to do, especially early downs. Then when they throw it deep, that's the headshot. So you got to cover that. So what they really want to do is Travis Kelce on your safety, Travis Kelce on your linebacker, Tyreek Hill on crossing routes. They want that intermediate
stuff.
Well,
what the hell has Tom Brady made a living at? Rob Gronkowski down the middle of your field.
Precisely.
Right? You know, right in the middle of your heart.
And what they make you do is cover everything so they can get a matchup that they like. It sounds complicated, but it's not. It's the simplest thing, and I think you touched on this early on in the show. I think Kevin O'Connell thinks about it this way. Having talked to Craig Hoffman and some of the other guys that cover this team who speak to O'Connell, he talks about things that are easy for us but hard for them to deal with. AKA, when Jordan Reed was healthy and Sean McVay and Jay Gruden had him, it's hard to deal with Jordan Reed if he's one-on-one against anybody.
Right.
That's easy for us because that's just Jordan Reed running an option route. It's hard for you. They don't have anybody that really makes it hard. Terry McLaurin's on his way to that, but he's still somebody that can be, you know, neutralized because you've got very little else that scares you. Enter a Sims, enter a tight end that can also block, enter a dynamic running back or two. Next thing you know, this is an offense that could go some places. So for me, I'm excited about Haskins. I've always liked him. So some of this is confirmation bias. But to me, the toolkit, the starter kit, whatever you want to call it, has always been there. It took longer for us to get to that because of some of the hiccups that were on the way. But for me, I'm more confident than I was, say, a month ago, that he can reach the ceiling of being a really good NFL quarterback.
He has checked the box that he was worth the number 15 pick overall in the draft. And that's all you had. At the way this season, look, whenever you have to go to an interim head coach and an interim situation is terrible in terms of player development, the one thing he has done is he has checked the box that he was worth the 15th pick overall in the first round of the draft. I mean, he's at least gotten that far this year in a terrible situation.
Bad situation.
You know, bad situation, but what we've also done, like I said, we've got an offensive coordinator now that has done things with him that he has developed, the player has developed, multiple wide receivers have developed, so we have seen some amazing progression amidst a bad situation when an interim staff comes in and takes over. Because a lot of guys check out. Bill Callahan's talked about that. It's one thing he's praised this team for.
Yeah, he's done a good
interim
job
situations,
that.
Right. Most guys check out. Panthers, they checked out. That team is checked out. The Redskins have not done that.
Yeah, they slipped a little bill under the door at the hotel, and everybody just said, no, go ahead and charge my card. They've checked out. That's Pete. I'm Danny. This is Grant and Danny here on The Fan. One more segment. We'll give you our Christmas plans. 5 minutes away on The Fan. Different names. Then it gets confusing, and you have to change your email. Christmas Eve.
Do you think if Grant had a kid, he would have taken today off?
I'm not good at it. I'm bad at taking days off.
Me too.
I leave vacation days unused. I don't have the confidence.
Makes two of us.
That other people have. Grant's even more neurotic about that than I am. He would just come to work.
That's what I'm saying.
He would just come to work.
I guarantee you, if he was not married with child, he would be here today.
I think you're probably right about that. Like, I feel so much guilt. The idea of, like, not coming to work is just so weird. I feel like I'm just, you know, they're going to be like, you know what? This dead air is better than that guy. I'm just going to have silence instead. Like, I'm just so nervous they're just going to give it away. Even though there's, like, a contract in place. I'm like, you know, this noisemaker is better than this needy, red-faced, bearded guy. He's not that good. I'm just so worried they're going to realize it and just, you know, not let me back in. My key card's not going to work.
I say this all the time. Every day that we get to work in a market of this size on this station that has had as much success as a team we have had in 2019, you know, it's a gift. I mean, it truly is a gift. I mean, because there we've seen a ton of our colleagues very recently, we've seen their jobs, unfortunately, you know, go by the wayside. And so every time that we get a chance to come back to this group to work for the guy that we get to work for on a daily basis, it's truly a Christmas gift for us because, as we all know, this profession will change the next day. Literally could change hours from now.
I know.
I mean, it's just how volatile it is.
It is a cool thing. So I echo all your sentiments there. Christmas docket. What's on your Darnell docket for the next couple days?
That's easy for me. My college basketball coaching sons coming into town, one tonight, one tomorrow. I'll spend some time with them, and we'll open presents tomorrow. We'll go to Shirley and Glenn Joyce's house and eat the best breakfast, as we always do Christmas morning.
Awesome.
And then we'll just kind of chill the rest of the day.
Are you a you-can-open-one-present Christmas Eve family? Or do you allow
kids,
the full
yes.
presents? I mean, what's your policy there?
For years, the policy has been the kids get to open one. 99.9% of the time, it is pajamas. But that's pretty much all we do.
Mm-hmm.
The three of them will get to open up something tonight, and that'll be it.
I come from a background, and if I may, I kind of take a stand on this. I think presents are for Christmas morning. I don't think you do a night before thing. I think the night before and the anticipation, I think you got to let it build. I think you got to have the restless night where the kid sneaks out and sees if he can find Santa, or you leave the cookies and milk. I think you don't do a single thing the night before other than watch a Christmas movie of some kind, have a nice dinner, whatever it is. I think the anticipation is so great. I think you lessen that by even a fraction by allowing a present on Christmas Eve. I don't believe you should open presents on Christmas Eve.
But do you
Eve.
Get pushback from that? If you were to push back on that, you know,
yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
It's not something I'm passionate about, right? And thankfully, I've married into a family that tends to agree. They don't do a Christmas Eve present, so it's nice to have just a unified front and set policy. Had I married into we actually just opened one on Christmas Eve. We sit down and do one. I wouldn't have been, upset about it, but it's like, because, again, it's for the kids. So I'm going to mother-in-law's in about a minute and 45 seconds. We'll be there. Father-in-law's on Thursday. I got my dad and my sister and her husband and their two kids. They got two now. I got to get used to that. They're coming over Saturday. It's the, again, kind of the blessing and the curse that everybody's kind of close. Everybody's, you know, you got everybody's, the different wheels are spinning because my brother and sister-in-law, they got to do four Christmases. We got to do three. You know what I mean? Just everybody just takes turns and you order, organize the queue. Everyone wants to see the grandkids. No one cares about you. You're just a conduit to the cute ones.
I'm just a chauffeur.
That's
when
what
it comes
I am.
To this
yeah.
stuff. I mean, fortunately for me, though, my drive to the in-laws is literally 2.5 miles.
That ain't bad.
So we finish unwrapping presents, and then we go eat a bunch of great food like half hour later.
Are you good at wrapping presents?
No.
I'm terrible at it.
It is so funny how much I get made fun of. Though the other night, I wrapped a box, and Danny, it may have been, and I, you know, January 5th, I will be 50 years old.
Wow.
It may have been the greatest present wrapping job I've ever done in my entire life. Finally. After all these years.
When I wrap something, it looks like Richard Jewell might find it in a park. Like, it's awful. It's so suspicious.
Here's what I would never do. I would just take the piece of paper, no matter how big or whatever it was, and I would use that entire piece of paper to wrap the present.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was too much paper, it looked like, you know, it had been through the ringer in the back of a FedEx delivery truck. In my case, I have finally started to take the time to trim off some of the excess so at least looks like a reasonably wrapped gift, where my 11-year-old, every time she wraps one now, it looks immaculate, like she could go opening up her own wrapping service for other people.
But then I over-trim, and then I don't have enough material,
and then you've left,
and I
got
to start over, and then I got nothing but these weird scraps that I try to use as car. I mean, I suck at it. I'm just so bad.
I've done that. I've just taken a scrap and put it over the part of a box that may still be exposed.
I'm a bag guy, and I'm an envelope guy now. So for my wife, I just do an envelope because I've got something, and I tell you what it is in the envelope. Because if I tried to wrap it, it would ruin it, and you'd be like, "What child?"
Well, first of all, if it fits in an envelope, then it's probably not that big, or it would be very difficult to wrap anyway.
Well, you can't wrap this, and just in case she's listening, I'm not going to say what it is, but it's in the envelope right now, and I have it with me.
Attaboy.
Pete, thank you. Merry Christmas,
buddy.
Yeah, man,
same to you.
Sean, Ryan, thank you guys very much. I certainly appreciate it. Merry Christmas to you and yours. And my last show of this calendar year, Pete will be back with you on Thursday, day after Christmas, with Jeep, doing solo, and then Friday with Grant, and he'll be back in the saddle. A heartfelt thank you. I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Pete already said it earlier in the segment, but we don't get to do this without you guys. And those of you that have listened to this show for a minute, for a month, for a year, for however many years it's been on, you download podcasts, you check in with us, you tweet us, people that hate my guts. The fact that you're interested at all in what I have to say is a dream come true, and it is awesome. It is the coolest thing I've ever gotten to do, and I can't believe I get to do it. And I'll be doing it for a little while longer, as long as people have me. So Merry Christmas to one and all. Appreciate you guys. And Chris Russell is up next. I'm telling you, you're not going to believe this. His hair looks awesome. We shaved it. It backfired because he looks cool. He's got a little beard, and he's got the short hair. He looks like muscle in a movie. He looks like a tough guy that comes in to intimidate. Like, you're not going to pay up. And then Russell's over in the corner just cracking his knuckles. He looks good. Merry Christmas to one and all.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.